Welcome from me, John Strickland, to the first in a series of podcasts looking at our future skies in partnership with AIG. We do this as the air transport industry is going through one of the most challenging times it's ever experienced with the aftermath of the COVID pandemic. We have current military conflict and significant economic challenges as well. And we're also seeing at the same time, the political outlook in many parts of the world is changing. And of course, the elephant in the room as far as aviation is concerned is the topic of the environment and sustainability. So there have never really been so many catalysts for change for the industry, and necessity, as they say, is the mother of invention. So I'm going to be talking with a number of leading players from different parts of the industry, exploring a range of views on where we might be headed, not so much in the immediate year or so, but in the next 10 or 20 year period. And I'm delighted that my first guest on this podcast is CEO of SAS Scandinavian Airlines, Anko van der Werf. Now, Anko has a wealth of diverse experience. He's a Dutchman. He started at KLM. He's subsequently been at Qatar Airways, Aeromexico, Avianca, and now SAS. And as a Dutchman, I think it's fair to say he has clear views on a number of ways in which he believes the industry is going to be permanently changed. So welcome, Anko.
John, thank you very much. Really a pleasure talking to you again. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's kick off, first of all, before we get to the broader issues at stake, by talking about your current airline, SAS, giving us a little bit of an update there. Because you could say SAS was born in a kinder, more gentler time from aviation's point of view. In the 1940s, it was a vision of the governments of Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. But today's landscape is really very different. And since you joined as CEO in 2021, you're really having to take the airline through some quite significant changes.
Yeah, that's true. I think beautiful airline, fantastic brand, of course. You read just the Scandinavian in all of us, I guess, is also quite pronounced. The countries got together, like you said, shortly after the war and figured out that they wouldn't really need three separate airlines, but wanted rather one airline to unite, and signed almost like an open skies of an lettre, right? I mean, this was really quite innovative at that point. I think recently the COVID era, in a way, has hit us also hard. We are now going through our own, as you have seen, restructuring plan. And that's, of course, also the things you refer to. And tracking well against it, right? Plenty of more things that we have to go through, of course. It's just an 9 to 12 months process typically that you go through. We are the first European airline to file for Chapter 11, and I'm sure we'll talk about it. But that, of course, is framing it for us in the right way, right? It provides us with more tools. It provides us with at least those mechanics or those tools that we need to get out as a much better airline, which I'm absolutely confident that we will.
And yes, as you said, Anko, SAS has had its own challenges, not least its origins, but in the backdrop that I described a few moments ago of the industry overall has been beaten up heavily in the last couple of years. So now let's look at some of these broader challenges and what your views are on what they may mean for the industry. COVID, of course, I think it's fair to say, was the biggest shock ever experienced by the aviation industry. And perhaps my first question to you, Anko, if we look back on that, do you think there are learnings, other ways the industry could do much better second time around on the assumption we are going to have another pandemic sometime?
Yeah, well, I think the learnings for all have been, of course, right? This is fixed cost versus variable cost. How quickly can you adjust? How quickly can you adapt to a new reality? And that new reality for most airlines has now been 2.5 years, right? I mean, little did we know, of course, back in March 2020. And I think it was really, few of us probably would have predicted that at least COVID itself would last 2.5 years. I mean, the recovery was always going to last years, but we knew that. But I think hardly anyone would have thought that by right now, late 2022, that we would be here and still dealing with, in a way, waves and shock waves of COVID. So yeah, I think the learnings are very much, in my view, probably 2-3 groups, right? Low-cost airlines have, of course, done fairly well, right, on relatively speaking, at least. Their balance sheets far more intact than pretty much every single other airline group or airline in the world. Very nimble, very agile. We're able to adjust far quicker. And I think in our cases, right, let's call it legacy airlines, it was really depending on how much I think could you still drive through partnerships, how much were you still able to drive through in some way or way, shape or form in a way through your consolidated efforts. And then, yeah, what further hits were there along the way, right? I mean, I think we were preparing ourselves for further ramp up in 2022, and then Omicron hits, and then you get the Russian airspace closure. Yeah, you can't really prepare for it. That is so difficult. So I think certainly in the case of airlines in Northern Europe, let's say, I mean, we're not the only ones, that Russian airspace closure has been then almost the nail in the coffin, if you like, right? It's a bad expression with what's going on in the world, but you get my point, right? It's a straw that broke the camel's back, let's put it that way. And so, yeah, very difficult to predict how long it will last. Therefore, definitely for the future, you want to build in the flexibility, you want to build in that agility, not just on the operational level, but very much also on the financial level. And that is what we're trying to do anyway, right? I think most of us are trying to prepare for a future in which we are more nimble.
And I think in some ways you've answered the next question I was going to put to you, Anker. You talked there about balance sheets. You talked about the strength of the low-cost carriers in particular against an array of challenges. And I was going to ask you, do you think there are ways that airlines can better handle this nightmare scenario, which effectively they went through, of having their revenues cut off entirely for incredibly long periods?
Yeah, look, it was very tough for most of us. I was at that point at a different airline, but I still stand behind the decisions that we took there, right, at Avianca. In a way, the Warren Buffett statement, right, never let a good crisis go to waste. And I think, in a way, many airlines took decisions straight away and they went in quite deep. Right, I think Avianca was one of them. We were, I think, at that point, the first to file for Chapter 11, and that allowed us, right, it's bankruptcy protection, right? It's not bankruptcy, it's bankruptcy protection. And it allowed us, right, it gave us access to tools that we didn't have before. So I think that's definitely one thing that for, let's call it, future generations, because I really don't hope to ever live this again, right? A pandemic as we've had in our lifetime, at least. But never let a crisis go to waste. Go in immediately. And certainly when you don't know how long it will take. And there was, looking back, it's so obvious now, right? There was really reasons to believe that we didn't know how long it was going to last, because there was no vaccine ready. So it was always going to be longer than, in a way, anyone expected. So again, go in, take your decisions, take them straight away. I think some airlines in the world and right, will still be struggling for the years to come if you didn't take those decisions. And if you haven't taken those decisions by now, then I think you're really in a very precarious spot for the next few years. The second thing there is, and I've always been quite amazed, I've particularly not liked the decisions coming out of some governments and not allowing, for instance, further consolidation, right? I've been quite vocal about that as well. I think Europe, let me focus on that, the European Commission and European countries, I get why those restrictions on, for instance, M&A were put in place when you get state bailouts and what have you. But if there's anything to learn, again, also, I think from a political perspective is, yeah, drive a policy towards a healthier industry altogether.
And that's one aspect of government and a very important one, I think, Anko. But also more broadly, government posed its own challenges for the industry and not one unique government, pretty well every government around the world. We saw so many incoherent and erratic changes of policy. Do you think it's realistic to expect, again, as part of the wider learnings, that we could get a more consultative and a more consistent government approach to some major medical pandemic emergency like this in the future?
Well, one would certainly hope so, because I agree with you, John. I mean, it was a nightmare. We had to, you really did not know what rule applied to whatever country at that point, right? So in a way, for Avianca, it was somewhat easier at that point. All of our hubs were closed. All of the airspace of those countries, at least, was closed. So that was, yeah, well, at some point, easier to deal with. But it still took a few weeks before you got there. And it was an absolute nightmare dealing with it. And then, of course, opening up and all those different countries. And right, there's still all these rules. Again, it's late 2022. Sorry, it's late 2022 by now. And we're still dealing with countries that are having different rules and regulations when it comes to COVID. You would hope at least that governments have also learned from that and that there will be far more of a coherent approach next time. But yeah, let's first hope and pray that there's never going to be a next time, right?
Indeed. And then, of course, there's a question of whether travel even has to be locked down in a pandemic. It seemed necessary at the time. Now people are asking questions about whether that made any difference in reality.
Yeah, I think it's probably not useful that I argue this corner, but I did raise at some point, and also to other CEOs, shall we just, as an industry, shall we just lock down ourselves now for, call it, a month, right? Or a number of weeks? Because that way, at least, we would have made sure that there was no argument against the industry altogether, right? Because, hey, it is true that some of this, of course, was transported through international passengers, at least. So I would caution against it, but I'm pretty sure that some governments will say the next time something like this happens, they'll actually go in harder, but hopefully more targeted, right? If it originates in a particular country, that maybe there's a severe lockdown for that country for a short period of time, and the rest of the world can at least continue. I'm not sure. Once the cat's out of the bag, then there was absolutely no reason to go through what we went through, right? Or forcing us to go through what we went through. It was surreal. You could see that it was everywhere, and there was all these different rules about, well, if you're on a connecting flight, then actually you can transport passengers, but when it's point to point, then you couldn't. And then, I mean, what kind of logic is that, right? So yeah, hopefully we've learned more targeted, shorter, if anything is needed at that point. But once it's spread, then just continue and work on other solutions.
And turning to a different aspect of this, Anko, one thing we saw when demand did start to come back, it's come back in a very strange way. It was not the type of demand and the mix of traffic we had before the pandemic. We had airlines historically, some of them making money out of premium cabin business customers, which now seems it may be changing. We've seen a very strong surge in leisure traffic, which may or may not be price sensitive. What shape do you think demand is going to be? What kind of traffic is going to come back? Is it going to be significantly different, you think, in the decades ahead from what we've known up to the pandemic beginning?
Yeah, well, decades ahead, I think that's a very difficult question, right?
A long way to look.
Forecast. Yeah, that's a very long path, right? But look, let's look. I fully agree. Leisure has bounced back. I think it shows that people want probably two things. People want to enjoy life, right, after all, and that does include visiting other places and looking around what's going on in the rest of the world. I've always been a big fan of travel, and that's why I'm in this industry. I really am. It is about connecting people. It is about connecting cultures. It is about the beauty of a flight that takes you. I mean, look, for us, right, within a matter of hours, you're in a completely different part of the world, right? Whether you go south, right, weather-wise, culture-wise, food-wise, I mean, it's just stunning, right? It's fantastic. And only flight can give you that. So I think that is something that people will always aspire to and will always do in a way, right? Whether it was Hannibal or Marco Polo or Columbus, right? We've always wanted to go out and visit other parts of the world, and that will continue. I do think that on the corporate side, we are cautious for corporate, let's call it medium-term demand. I am revising my own forecasts upwards. We do think that also corporate is bouncing back really well. But I still think that because of sustainability and because of, right, we have seen now that digital works, and we have seen that all these companies have invested in digital solutions, that probably there's going to be somewhat of an impact on corporate travel. And yeah, then I do think that the implications for our industry is that if leisure is therefore relatively more important going forward, then you also have a far peakier type of distribution of your traffic throughout the year, right? I mean, then your holiday periods, including weekends, will be relatively more important, at least for the likes of airlines such as us, right? I mean, SAS was predominantly a business airline, And again, for the reasons that we just spoke about, I think leisure is going to be more important, and that means a different demand profile, and it means that we need to have a different, in a way, resource planning profile as well.
And talking of resource planning, Anko, one of the other big challenges that perhaps came left the field very unexpectedly this summer, as that demand did come back in such a strong way, has been manpower. You know, the industry's been caught out across the board, airlines, airports, other business partners. Do you think the industry actually still remains sufficiently attractive in terms of career opportunities, in terms of the paying conditions that it offers, or is that going to require a rethink for the future?
No, I think we will be, and we will also have to be. Quite surprising still in many ways that the entire ecosystem couldn't deliver on the, call it, customer promise for at least the last summer, right? Forget call it maybe labor disruption and what have you, right, on particular strikes that we've seen, right, left, right, center. But look, it's not just about pay, I think, on the lower end of the scale. When I look at very good and well-run companies that I don't think have pay issues, like Airbus, who are still struggling with delivery delays and, right, find it hard to ramp back up. And that's not just because of spare parts or components or, right, materials or supply chain issues. Then I do think we need to get, it's far broader than just, I think, a salary issue at maybe the lower end of the scale. That's my point. Now, we haven't done ourselves a great service, right, by, it's been rough in the industry, right? It's been rough for 2.5 years at least now, where we haven't been able to provide certainty to, let's call it, new joiners or newcomers or people coming out of, right, other jobs that want to maybe hop over to the airline industry. So I think that will be far more stable in 2023 and beyond. I really do think so. One of the reasons, again, is when I look at, for instance, SAS, yeah, short term, of course, a challenge to go through a restructuring after, call it, 2 years of COVID. But when we go through this and we get our cost levels right, and we then set ourselves up for right future success, and you can grow again, then there is absolutely every reason to be confident about the industry, or at least the employer again, right? So I think when we're already looking now for summer 2023, we are looking to recruit about 1,000 pilots and cabin crew, right, on just those two labor groups. And so I think as of next year, we'll definitely be far more stable and will be attractive again.
And looking also at the structure of the industry, Anko, what about airline business models? We've got a whole variety ranging from full service, low cost long haul, now ultra long haul, hub carriers, point to point. What is your feeling about the way the shape of the industry is going to evolve in the years ahead? I mean, you're taking SAS itself through changes in its approach. What about more broadly?
Yeah, I think we've seen that that clearly the low cost model I think works, right? At least on short haul, right? Narrow bodies, low cost has, I think, proven to work. Europe, United States, or Latin America, wherever you go, I think that's a model that definitely is there. I think in many ways, the, call it, network hubs have proven to be more resistant than maybe I thought. It took, of course, a while, but when you look at the majors, both on both sides of the Atlantic, at least, they've come out fairly well, right? Reporting at least also some profits again, right? Will be in a position to further grow. I'm still not convinced on long haul, low cost, because if that is about putting in some wide bodies, no matter what price you can get those wide bodies for right now, right? Talking again about seasonal or seasonality and more pronounced leisure seasonality, it's great. You're going to make money in July and August, and then what are you going to do with the aircraft, right? So I think that is a structural challenge for long haul, low cost, and I remain unconvinced about that. I think for us, let's call it the somewhat more maybe independent or medium-sized airlines that are not really low cost and not a major, call it that way, we have our work cut out for ourselves. And that's why we're going through this restructuring. And that's why we are indeed taking, I think, more profound decisions on our cost levels as well. Look, we won't be a low cost, but I think at least we can lower our costs substantially, and we can build in some of that flexibility. And that's at least what we're doing, to be in a much better shape. And then the question is, and that isn't a question for SAS, but I do think that further consolidation needs to happen, right, as a whole. So I want to make it clear again, that's not necessarily for SAS, but I'm a believer that consolidation in the end is what this industry still needs.
Well, I'm certainly with you, Anko, on long-haul low cost. There's little doubt it's popular with customers, but the ability to actually make money on a sustainable basis, I think very much the jury is still out. And just another aspect of this, what about startups? Right now, we're seeing a lot of startups because there's a plentiful supply of good, new and used aircraft available, but it's an industry that attracts people in. They always think that something different can be done. Would you be hopeful that some of them might take root and bring something new that is sustainable for the future?
Yeah, time will tell. With all the challenges that we're having here, I'm still very happy that we have the market share, the capacity share, the people, the team, the processes and everything lined up, and that we don't have to, in that sense, reinvent completely the wheel or start up right from scratch. Look, like you said, it's sexy, right? Starting up your own airline and, right, great. You have, right, certainly in 2020 and 2021, you had access to cheap aircraft and maybe labor was available. I think many of them will rethink whether this was a great decision come winter, right? I mean, winter is coming, fuel at 100. Rates of exchange going against many of them, at least, very challenging, right? And yeah, I think to say the least, the jury is still out on many of them. Time will tell. I certainly don't think that all of those startups, all of the 2020, 2021 startups will be here in a matter of maybe months, but years.
I'm a bit of a skeptic too, and I'd like to think one or two will make it. But that classic statement about how do you make a small fortune start with a large fortune and invest in an airline, I think it still applies.
Start your own airline.
Absolutely.
Yeah, still applies.
Let's turn to the elephant in the room that I mentioned in my introduction, Anko. And of course, I'm talking about the environment. So that issue is not going to go away. And certainly whether we do or don't have to live through another pandemic, this is a climate issue for our planet. Do you think, given that the industry is inevitably in the spotlight, that it first of all can actually move beyond claims coming from some quarters that it's just greenwashing in saying it wants to adapt and play its part in addressing this challenge?
Oh, I think we can and we will. I certainly don't agree to that in the case of SAS. I mean, we are very real. It's externally audited and we are investing significant amounts of money to also make sure that we get to that next step, right? I think there is a challenge, and that is the mismatch between public perception or maybe the public need, the public want to get to a green future. Right, a sustainable future, the same way that, of course, we want it as leaders in the industry, and on the other side, the technological capabilities or even just the short-term supply, for instance, of sustainable aviation fuel. That mismatch is very hard, I think, for us going forward. People, including myself and right many other executives in the airline industry, will want to go much faster. And it's a challenge, right? I mean, it's just because either technologically, like I said, or right on SAF, the supply is simply not there. So that, I think, is something that we have to work through. I think what I still see around us is a lot of, maybe offsetting. And we have still one or two elements on offsetting that we are having ourselves as well, but we're rethinking. I think offsetting more and more probably considered to be not the real solution, let's put it that way, right? So we're also rethinking that. But I think everything else that we're doing, from investing, of course, in new technology, from even being part of some of the electrical aviation forefront, right, suppliers or startups there, to, of course, investing and spending heavily on sustainable aviation fuel, I think is real. We are, in 2025, we had our target that we wanted to be minus 25% by 25 versus a 2005 baseline. And we're making that. We're going to surpass that. So we're also now with the board in a process of coming up with new targets. First of all, for right that short term. So what more can we do, knowing that we will beat that 2025 target, and then having a 2030 target out there, right? So that will, of course, be sustainable targets that will be far more aggressive than what we've had so far. We are investing, so also in SAS Forward, there is significant money dedicated towards that path. But yeah, once again, a challenge to really match what we would want to do already tomorrow.
You've touched on quite a number of the key elements there, Anko. I wanted to ask you a little more about the role that aircraft types will play in improved performance, new technology, and are we talking about bigger planes or smaller planes? You mentioned SAS has got a leading role in one of the new regional aircraft projects. And then linked with that, as a supplementary question, is the alternative power sources. Aircraft are burning kerosene today, but we hear talk about hydrogen, we hear talk about electric, which includes that regional arena that I mentioned. Where does all that sit?
Yeah, I have a maybe oversimplified view, but at least to keep it manageable, I think, in our own heads as well. Look, there is indeed, there's carbon capture, there's hydrogen. Airbus has said, of course, that that they think hydrogen will be ready right 2035. I really do hope so. Typically, right, whatever year people put out there, let's see whether that's then immediately applicable to all fleets worldwide and all aircraft, right? So again, when people are talking about 2035, then before you have that ramped up on all aircraft worldwide, I think it's going to take certainly some time. Electric aviation is then one step ahead of all of that. We are now very close to a Swedish startup called Hartz Aerospace. They're going from a 19-seater to a 30-seater, and that will enter into service in 2028 in low volumes, right? So you have the two challenges there. The number of aircraft that they will produce in 2028 is, of course, limited. And secondly, the impact or footprint that will have in itself, right? 30 seats, it's small. I get that. But we're still excited about it because it is at least real. It's a well-funded startup that has the good team behind it, that has signed up with real airlines to produce something in a manageable time frame, right? 2028 entry into service. So hey, we have to start somewhere. The 19-seater was too small for us. We've been in dialogue with them, of course, constantly. So now there's at least a 30-seater, and the basis for that aircraft, the design, could be stretched to 40, 50 seats. Okay, right? That's already at least in the right direction, right? The trend is right. And then the second challenge there is we have to start producing more, right? Producing more of those aircraft. What can you do with those aircraft? Right? I'm pretty sure that you can ask me. So a 30-seater, I think it's far more important to start somewhere and have that in a relatively short period of time. And you can do two things at least with a 30, 40, 50 seater, right? I mean, that is either you're going to fly to destinations that are close in and make them completely sustainable, or you even open up some new destinations, right? I mean, the northern parts of Sweden, for instance, secondary, tertiary cities that you cannot connect at the moment, secondary, tertiary Norway, high up in Norway, is perfect aircraft for that, right? And so let's give that a try. And then to finish it off, like I said, right, if you walk it back from carbon capture to hydrogen to then electrical aviation to short term, well, then it's about SAF, right? It is about biofuels. And we're also investing heavily in those. We have partnerships with, for instance, Vattenfall, LanzaTech, and Shell Aviation, alcohol to jet, for instance, right? It's something that we're investing in with them. Get us more, right? Get us more initiatives. I also think that, in a way, get us more funding for those type of startups that will provide us with the supply of aviation fuels. And that is maybe somewhat of a frustration. When you look at the United States, it's very much based on an incentive model, right? They incentivize those startups. And in Europe, it's very much, it is about taxation, and it's very much about more complexity there, I think.
Well, I think you've taken the words out of my mouth, Anko, because as you said, for long haul flying, there's no immediate solution when it comes to electric or hydrogen. It has to be this sustainable aviation fuels. And as you rightly say, there's a challenge of getting this to scale. Can we get it to scale? At what cost? And more broadly, what do you think about getting funding for this? Who is going to pay for it? Is it going to be the aircraft and engine manufacturers? Is it going to be the airlines? Are governments going to take a more active role to help the industry along this road?
Yeah, and you would hope so. Again, that's was my last point right there. Right? I mean, the United States at least is taking that approach, and clearly, as airlines, we're looking in that sense a bit jealously at what's going on in the United States. You would hope so. It needs to happen. I think the other thing that needs to happen there is that passengers themselves, right? I mean, it requires a customer behavior change. We see very few of our passengers that buy biofuel, for instance. We have that as an ancillary product. It's very easy in your in our web flow, right? In your acquisition, in your purchase flow on online, for instance. What we are seeing is corporate accounts getting real serious. We have a corporate sustainability program as well, and there people are participating. So more and more big corporate accounts are signing up with SES to actually fund their own travel or buy the biofuel on top of their own travel, and then can account, of course, that towards their own emission schemes, if you like.
And just another aspect of government, which took me by surprise, I'm sure the same for you, Anko, recently, and begs the question of what governments are going to do in the future, was the recent decision by the Dutch government to put an enormous cap of capacity on Amsterdam Schiphol Airport, not just a temporary cap during the COVID period, but permanently, to leave it with levels of capacity lower than it had pre-crisis. That came as a shock. You're an ex-KLM man, as I am myself. It was a shock to the airport, a shock to KLM. Do you think that could be an indicator that we may see other governments decide to take a leaf out of the same book in the future? Is that a concern we should be ready to fight back against?
Yeah, I'm not hearing it anywhere else. As you said, right? I'm Dutch, so of course I do follow the Dutch news. I think it's a particular political discussion in the Netherlands. But yeah, I haven't heard it anywhere else. I think it's far more about making sure that we get to that sustainable future. No one, in essence, is denying the benefits that travel has. Right, travel as a whole has for society and of course connectivity of economies and the nations as such. It's just how to get to that sustainable future faster, and then people won't have an issue with it. But I think like I said, I don't hear it elsewhere. I'm not seeing it. In our case, I still very much here, at least, and it's been public, of course, so I can say it, but the Danish government very much wanting to be a future part of SAS, right, or a part of the future SAS, and that's, of course, under the same header of, right, connectivity for the nation, connectivity for their businesses, connectivity for their people, and so that doesn't change as much. It remains to be seen, John. It was surprising to see what happened in the Netherlands. It's clear that part of, I think, the Dutch, wealth, if you like it, has been built on pillars such as Schiphol and KLM and, right, working together towards connectivity. So surprising, but I'm so far not seeing or hearing it elsewhere.
As you say, Anko, that key economic role that aviation performs, we have to ensure that is kept in focus in parallel with moving towards that sustainable future. Just drawing to a close now, Anko, I'd like to ask you to look into your crystal ball, if you will, and reflect just a little bit on the changing world that we're living in politically and economically. We've touched on some of these themes already, but I think we are seeing changes in the dynamics of the world order, you could see, especially politically, with a shift in many governments from perhaps a more global outlook to a far more nationalistic one. You could say, from that point of view, we're looking at perhaps a closing world. And then how does that stack up against the outlook of populations, the old world perhaps closing in and retrenching, and yet the new world hungry to have experience of travel, which maybe many Western nations have already had?
Yeah, no, great question. Spent quite some time here also thinking about that, and we've had good discussions here. There was a good, I'm not sure where it was, but it was only a few days ago on TV somewhere that I saw this debate around what's, in a way, the fallout now, what's the implications of the war in Ukraine. And I think the overarching conclusion there was that there will be political repercussions for at least 25 to potentially 50 years, right? And it is something that we're seeing. I think around us, there was under Scandinavian companies, there was a question on, okay, what does this mean for us, right? The war in Ukraine. And one of the questions was specifically around globalization and supply chains. And very much the direction for those companies, the answer that those companies gave was, well, there will be more regional sourcing. There will be more home sourcing in a way, right? So you will want to control your supply chains again closer to home, because what we have seen now is, of course, a major dent in flows for manufacturing companies in many ways as well, right? So that was already because of COVID, but then certainly because of Russia, Ukraine. So that is one of the things I think that will happen. And therewith, indeed, globalization is, I don't know, taking a beating is probably a bit too much, right? But it's definitely having an impact, and that will have an impact on the likes of the airlines. If you look at SAS, Russian airspace closed is certainly not helping to grow our Asian business, right? We flew up to 30 frequencies a week to Asia. We're currently flying one. We've just taken a decision, at least for this winter season, to not go into Japan. We probably will be back there, right, in the future, but at least not this winter season. And then, like I said, we have to rethink, okay, well, regional supply chains, if that's going to be closer to home, or if they're going to go from global supply chains to regional supply chains, what does that mean? Also with Eastern Europe, still somewhat shaky, right? And can we then focus more heavily on Eastern Europe? That would have been the logical place to go. But hey, Ukraine and what spillover will there be? Very, very difficult. Clearly also at least a short-term, medium-term impact on fuel and exchange rates. But we live in countries here, and SAS is an airline that has Swedish, Norwegian, and the Danish kroner. And yeah, definitely the Swedish kroner has come under pressure with everything that's happened over the last 6 months. Yeah, a challenge definitely on the, I think, on a much more medium, longer term as well. It's not just this winter season that I think is potentially going to be a challenge, but it's far longer than that.
No, definitely weighty issues there to reflect on, and very imprecise ones to work out where they take us, Anko, along with what we were saying about the pandemic. Any other future risks that you'd point to, Anko, things which airline managements are going to have to try to navigate their way around?
No, I think
that's enough.
I hope this is enough, John. I hope, exactly. Globalization to regionalization, future pandemics. You've touched upon labor shortages and, of course, supply chain issues to ramp up production across the ecosystem. Let's leave it at that, shall we? Because that's enough to chew on.
That suits me, Anko. Well, listen, we are pretty well out of time anyway. It's been great to talk to you about these weighty issues and to hear your reflections built on your own very wide experience from around the aviation world in many parts of the world. So, Anko van der Werf, CEO of SAS, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks to you for listening. I hope we've provided you with some valuable insight and food for thought today. I'll be back soon with the next in the series. But for now, from me, John Strickland, it's goodbye.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast series are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of American International Group, Inc., or its subsidiaries or affiliates, AIG. Any content provided by our speakers are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything. AIG makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, or validity of any information provided during this podcast series and will not be liable for any errors, omissions, or delays in this information, or any losses, injuries, or damages arising from its use.